Some years ago, I was serving as a volunteer in a youth ministry, and we decided to go to Ensenada, Mexico for a week of ministry. I was one of the drivers in a caravan of vans that was heading down to Mexico. I think we had four or five vans that were going down. Everything was going well until just after we crossed the border. And then I made a wrong turn, and I ended up in Tijuana with a van full of, I think, about 12 kids. And the other vans proceeded on toward Ensenada. I think they figured out by, we had radio communication back then, that we got stuck in Tijuana. So I had to try to find a way to get back on the road, get back to Ensenada, but not speaking very much Spanish and certainly not able to communicate in a way to ask directions in really good Spanish. I'm looking at my friend Paul over here, and Paul and I were in Belize one time, and we were trying to speak Spanish to these folks. It reminds me of that occasion. Didn't go too well. But I managed to stick my head out of the window and ask for directions in this way. I intended to ask, ¿Dónde está Ensenada? Which is, where is Ensenada? It's not asking for where the directions exactly, but that's what I was thinking in my mind. The only problem with this was, well, there are many problems with this, but one of the problems was I had just returned from a trip to Italy, and so I had a little bit of Italian rolling around in my head. So I stuck my head out of the window and asked to a couple of Tijuana residents who were passing by, and I said to them, "Dove Ensenada?" Which I think means in Italian, "Where Ensenada?" Needless to say, at that particular moment, I was in desperate need of a little course correction. I was stuck in Tijuana. I wanted to go to Ensenada, but I got stuck in Tijuana. Jacob really should have intended to go to Bethel. This is the trajectory of his life, is to go back to Bethel. Instead, he got stuck in Shechem. And Shechem turned out to be a total debacle. His daughter was raped there. Jacob did nothing about it. He lost the respect of his sons. And his sons proceeded to slaughter every male in the town in order to rescue their sister. So Genesis 35 then gives us a map for how it is that we can resume our spiritual journeys on the heels of spiritual failure. This is what happens in Jacob's life. He must resume his spiritual journey after he has failed in Shechem. So if you haven't done so already, please turn with me to Genesis chapter 35. Genesis 34 is a story of defilement. The people of God are defiled in the city of Shechem. Genesis 35 is a story of grace. God responds to Jacob's defilement yet again with grace. It is also a story of purification because Jacob and his family must purify themselves after what has happened in Shechem. It seems to me that this is a microcosm of Jacob's entire life, these last two chapters, defilement and grace. Isn't that what his whole life has been about? He's failed, but God has responded with grace. Perhaps it is our life as well, in microcosm, these two chapters. Our failure, God's grace. That may be the big story of our lives, probably is. We have failed in some way, some big way, and yet God has responded with grace. But I think we live out this giant story in itsy-bitsy little chapters in our lives, in microcosm. Our failure, God's grace. So Genesis 35 features the final legs in Jacob's journey. These final legs were anticipated by his vow in Genesis chapter 28 when he envisioned going back to Bethel and worshiping in this place again, and he also envisioned going back to his father's house. And so he's going to go first to Bethel, and then he's going to go to Hebron, and we're going to pick up the journey to Hebron next week. So we're going to look at our particular passage this morning in two sections, verses 1 through 8, where Jacob resumes his journey, and then verses 9 through 15, where Jacob worships at Bethel. Verse 1. Then God said to Jacob, "Go up to Bethel and settle there and build an altar there to God who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau." So Jacob said to his household and all who were with him, "Get rid of the foreign gods you have with you and purify yourselves and change your clothes. Then come, let us go up to Bethel, where I will build an altar to God who answered me in the day of my distress, and who has been with me wherever I have gone. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had, and the things and the rings in their ears, and Jacob buried them under the oak at Shechem. Then they set out, and the terror of God fell on the towns all around them, so that no one pursued them. Jacob and all the people with him came to Luz, that is Bethel, in the land of Canaan. There he built an altar, and he called the place Bethel, El Bethel, which because it was there that God revealed himself to him when he was fleeing from his brother. Now Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died and was buried under the oak below Bethel. So it was named Alon Bakuth. Well, Jacob has stumbled badly in Shechem, and now he is desperately in need of a little course correction. The Lord himself provides it for Jacob. Now, it's interesting that the Lord does not even speak about his failure, about Jacob's failure. Apparently, Jacob does not need to be reminded of it. Jacob does not need to be told at this point in his life that he has failed. Evidently, he's gotten the picture that there is some kind of failure that he was responsible for in Shechem. And so the Lord simply comes to him with a command. And this command to Jacob reminds him of the Lord's promises, the promises that the Lord made to him when he first came to Bethel, and also of the vow that he made to the Lord at Bethel, to make the Lord his God if the Lord fulfilled certain requirements, and to return to Bethel, and ultimately, in view of the Lord's promises, to return to his father's house. So the command comes to Jacob, go up. Now, in order to leave Shechem and go to Bethel, Jacob and his household would have to gain 1,000 feet in elevation. This is language that will be used often in the future regarding the pilgrims who were going up to Jerusalem for regular feasts, regular festivals, in order to worship the Lord. They would go up, they would ascend the hill, they would go up Mount Zion in order to worship the Lord in Jerusalem. And so what Jacob has to do is he has to make a spiritual ascent here. He has hit another low in Shechem, perhaps an all-time low, and now he must make a spiritual ascent. He must go up to meet with God in Bethel. Now, faith is going to be required for this journey because Jacob now thinks that he has made an enemy of the peoples of the land. He has gone into Shechem, and his family became a militant family from the perspective of the people of the land. And now Jacob is afraid, if he is going to journey forward, he is afraid that now the people of the land are going to attack him and his household. So now in order to move forward, he has to trust that the Lord is going to protect him and his family because they are few in number. Before he resumes his journey, however, he calls his family, his household together, and he says that we must forsake these gods. Apparently, they had accumulated other gods, idols in the journey, probably some idols in Shechem they have picked up, and others also along the way. They have accumulated these and incorporated these idols into their worship lives. And Jacob says we must forsake these, we must get rid of these. The family must also undergo a ritual purification because they have been defiled in Shechem. And then also they must change their garments. This would be commemorative of a new way of life. If they put on new garments, this means that they're going to live in a new way. And I don't think this gives us license if we want to engage in some new way of life to go shopping at Nordstrom or Macy's and get some new set of clothes and say, hey, I'm living in a new way. I don't think that would be a correct application of this particular passage. And finally, what Jacob does now is give these gods a proper burial. These gods have no business being attached to the people of God, and the people must get rid of them. And so Jacob says, let's bury these gods. These gods would be burdensome for this journey, and the foreign gods always weigh you down. No matter how much you think they're going to help you, they always weigh you down, particularly if you are going to gain 1,000 feet in elevation to go worship the true God. You cannot be dragging along all these false gods with you. And so Jacob says, let's bury these gods. Do you see what's happened to our man Jacob? He's become a worship leader. This failure, this one who is very resistant to the will of God, somehow, and God, by God's grace, has become a worship leader. He gathers his household, and now they begin this pilgrimage in order to worship God at Bethel. And God protects them on the journey. This would be kind of surprising because they wouldn't expect to be protected in this way. Jacob actually expected that what happened in Shechem would incite the people of the land in order to attack him, but actually the reverse happens. The people now are afraid. The terror of the Lord has fallen upon the people so that they become paralyzed actually by what happened in Shechem. They don't attack Jacob, and he is given safe passage. Jacob comes to Bethel, and the text says, and all the people with him. So Jacob comes to Bethel again, but now he comes with the household, this enormous household, which is the people of God. This is a very profound and important thing that has happened in Jacob's life. He is not a lonely individual anymore. He is the leader of a family, the most important family in the history of the world, the family that will save all families. So he has come to the same place, but now he is a different man. And this place was originally called Luz, and then Jacob changed the name to Bethel, which means house of God, and now he gives this place yet another name, which is El Bethel, which means God of the house of God. This represents an intensification of the name. And this represents not so much the significance of the place, but the significance of God himself. Jacob, of course, when he originally came to Bethel, took note of the significance of God, but also the significance of the place. Now what is most significant to him is the significance of God. God has ascended in Jacob's thoughts and in his mind, in his life, to take on new and more profound meaning to him. And now we get this little throwaway line about Deborah, who is Rebekah's nurse, that she has died, which raises the question, what happened to Rebekah, who was Jacob's mother? Why don't we hear about her again? In fact, we never hear about her again in the entire Jacob narrative. She vanishes. Well, what is the narrator trying to tell us? The narrator is rendering verdict on Rebekah because she involved herself in this deceit back in Genesis 27 in order to deceive her husband Isaac in order to get the blessing for her favorite son, who was Jacob. And so we have this mention of Deborah, but we don't have a mention ever again in the Jacob narrative regarding Rebekah. And Rebekah thought that it was only going to be a few days before she was going to see Jacob again. She sent Jacob away to Haran, but she thought in a few days he's going to return with a wife. But she evidently died before ever seeing Jacob again. And so this oak is named Alan Bakuth, which means oak of weeping. And we get the impression from the narrative that Jacob's tears would not be so much for Deborah, but for a mother he would never see again. Well, how about us? How about when we wander off course the way Jacob did? A lot of times we wander off course spiritually, but we don't even know that we've done so until something like Shechem happens to us. Some debacle, some calamity, something terrible happens, and we realize I've been passive, or we realize I've made some mistake, and then kind of the light bulb goes off, and we realize that somewhere along the way we took a wrong turn. How do we respond at that point, when that realization takes hold, when it strikes you, in all its terror sometimes, that you made a wrong turn and that wrong turn led to some kind of calamity? How do we respond? Oftentimes, we respond by subjecting ourselves to self-flagellation or wallowing in self-pity. God instead says to us, go up to Bethel, resume your journey, worship me. And so what we have to do is we have to resume our journeys. We have to get started again. And in order to do so, reconnecting with God's promises often helps us. Connecting with God's promises in Christ to protect us and keep us and guard us and bring us safely into the new promised land, which is the new heavens and the new earth, the new creation, where we will worship God, seeing the face of Christ forever. We must make, like Jacob, a spiritual ascent. Somehow, we got stuck in Shechem. But now the mountain looms before us and we must climb it. And as we get going, as we get started, as we start climbing the mountain, our hearts beat faster. The air gets fresher. The view gets clearer. Faith is necessary for this journey in order to make this spiritual ascent. To believe that God is still with you on the heels of spiritual failure, that is a step of faith. That is a profound and deep step of faith, to trust that God still believes in you, is still present with you, is still leading you to someplace good. There is, of course, a place for mourning our sin, particularly the effect that our sin has, but not wallowing in our sin. I think many of us use failure, use spiritual failure as an excuse to stay in Shechem instead of taking the risky journey to Bethel, instead of becoming true worshipers of God, which is, exposes you to all kinds of ridicule. We stay in some kind of spiritual Shechem. And we say, I'm a failure. I'll never make more of myself than this. So why bother? I'm going to wallow in this for a while. It's an excuse, isn't it? Well, if we have ended up in some kind of a spiritual Shechem, we have most likely involved ourselves in the worship of other gods. We have incorporated other gods into our worship. And these gods are burdensome. We must forsake these foreign gods. We must give them a proper burial. And doing something symbolic here is often a very helpful exercise. This purification that they go through, this is filled with symbolism. And we don't have all the rich symbolism so much in our tradition, but I think we can add our own traditions, our own symbolism, in order to recognize somehow that we have to bury these foreign gods. If we have defiled ourselves, we must purify ourselves. And how do you do that? You come to the cross of Jesus Christ and you let His blood cleanse you from all unrighteousness. And He does it. Symbolism is often helpful here as well, particularly the symbolism of the Lord's table, which we celebrate regularly at this church. And if you are going to resume your spiritual journey after spiritual failure, you must do so with spiritual companions. You must find some other people to journey with. You'll never make it to Bethel by yourself. If you try to journey on by yourself as an individual, you will end up in Shechem every single time. Perhaps, maybe, even like Jacob, we can become leaders in this great spiritual pilgrimage. You say, how can I become a leader? I failed spiritually, failed perhaps morally. Well, there is a way in which failure actually can qualify you all the more to be a spiritual leader. Because if you have failed and you recognize that and understand that and have kind of owned up to it and then been touched by God's grace, you are in touch with God. You are in touch with His grace, which makes you all the more fit to be a spiritual leader, all the more fit to gather others together, to confess your sins, and to move forward up the mountain. The most remarkable thing about failure in this passage is that it can actually work to your advantage. Jacob expected his failure to provoke the Canaanites, but it actually paralyzed them. Who knows how God can turn our missteps into advantages? I think the Apostle Paul would agree with this at the end of Romans 5 and at the beginning of Romans chapter 6, where he says, where sin increased, grace abounded all the more. And then we might ask the very same question that Paul asks next. Shall we continue in sin that in order that grace might increase? What's his answer? No way, dude. There's no way you should do that. If you think that God's grace gives you license to sin, then you have not understood God's grace. And perhaps Now, as we are coming to some kind of spiritual Bethel, where we meet with God again, where in a place where that God has met with us before, we are reminded of that prior experience. But you know what happens? You come to that place as a different man. You come to that place as a different woman, like Jacob did. And you recognize, you know what? I am not the same person I used to be. And it's hard to recognize that living day to day, living minute by minute. It's hard to recognize how far God has taken you until you have an experience that reminds you of a prior experience. And now that serves as a marker to show you the Lord has actually taken you a long way. Maybe you didn't realize it. But now, coming again to Bethel, so to speak, you see that God has done some very significant things in your life. You don't think the way you used to think. You don't worship the way you used to worship. You don't struggle the way you used to struggle. Your current experience, then, serves as an intensification of your prior experience. Earlier, the place was significant. Perhaps even a geographical place was very significant to you. And maybe you even come to that same place again. But you realize what God has done in all these years. And now it is God who ascends in your thoughts. The place serves only to bring you to God. It is the significance of God that matters to you. The important thing from the perspective of the beginning of Genesis chapter 35 is if we get stuck in our spiritual journeys, we must get moving again. Let's go back to Tijuana for a moment. I was stuck in Tijuana. I wanted to get to Ensenada. I did not know how to get back to onto the road to Ensenada. So what am I going to do? Pull off to the side of the road, beat myself up, flagellate myself, cry, woe is me, I made a mistake, woe is me, I made a wrong turn. I have 12 kids in my van. They're counting on me to get them to Ensenada. I have to find a way to get them to Ensenada. I have to find a way to get back on the road. Even if I have to make a fool out of myself in order to do so. Even if I have to stick my head out of the window as an English-speaking American and speak broken Italian to a Spanish-speaking Mexican. I have to do it. I have to find a way to get back on the road. And to be honest with you, I don't remember how I got back on the road. I just know I got back on the road. And we ended up in Ensenada for a wonderful week of ministry. You see, brothers and sisters, others are counting on your leadership. You can't sit on the side of the road wallowing in your sin when other people need you to gather them and lead them on this great spiritual pilgrimage. Picking up the story, verse 9, we find that Jacob worships at Bethel. After Jacob returned from Paddan Aram, God appeared to him again and blessed him. God said to him, "Your name is Jacob. But you will no longer be called Jacob. Your name will be Israel." So he named him Israel. And God said to him, "I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and increase in number. A nation and a community of nations will come from you, and kings will come from your body. The land I gave to Abraham and Isaac I also give to you, and I will give this land to your descendants after you." Then God went up from him at the place where he had talked with him. Jacob set up a stone pillar at the place where God had talked with him, and he poured out a drink offering on it. He also poured oil on it. Jacob called the place where God had talked with him Bethel. So once again, God appears to Jacob at Bethel. In so many words, the narrator is implying that Jacob really should have journeyed on to Bethel in the first place instead of being diverted into Shechem. But also, he's telling us that the Lord is giving Jacob a fresh start in the promised land. And the Lord reaffirms for Jacob his destiny and his identity, despite his failure. But the Lord also challenges Jacob now through this reaffirmation in order to live in a way that befits his identity and his calling. He affirms that Jacob is the carrier of the Abrahamic covenant. He sums up the promises that were made to Abraham and also made to Jacob earlier, and he even expands upon those promises. The future of humanity is still with this man, Jacob, despite his checkered past, even his recent checkered past. And so Jacob responds now by doing what he did when God first appeared to him. When God first appeared to him and he took this stone and he converted it into a pillar and he consecrated it and he worshiped the Lord there, now he does the same thing again. He takes this stone, he erects a pillar, and he consecrates it. What is Jacob doing? He is remembering how desperate he was at that particular point in his life when he came to Bethel earlier. He remembers how desperate he was, and he remembers how God showed up to meet him when he needed him most. He worships in the same way, remembering how God has sustained him for all these years. Jacob is not a man who has forgotten where he has come from. He commemorates this most recent appearance of the Lord in a way that recollects the first appearance of the Lord. And once again, a stone becomes part of Jacob's life. The stone is Jacob's signature motif. Stones have filled his life. It has been a hard, difficult life. But the Lord has met him. The Lord has even transformed those stones into places of worship. The Lord has removed obstacles out of the way in order for Jacob to meet with him. And now, at Bethel, what does Jacob do? He gathers up 2+ decades worth of memories, and he worships the Lord with them. This place called Bethel looms large in Jacob's psyche. It is, in essence, his spiritual home. It is a place that he keeps returning to, in actuality or in thought. When he came to Machanaim, it seemed like he came to Bethel. When he wrestled with God at Peniel, it seemed like Bethel. Every place he comes to, particularly as he comes back into the Promised Land, it seems like Bethel. And now he comes to Bethel once again, and it is Bethel. It's kind of where he belongs. It's a touchstone for him. It's home. It's a spiritual home. And now Jacob does not make a vow. Earlier, when he came to Bethel, he made a vow. He said, Lord, I will make you my God if you meet certain conditions. Well, the Lord has met those conditions. Jacob is not interested in making a vow any longer because he has made the Lord his God. He has come to this place, this time, as a worshiper of the one true God, and he will leave also as a worshiper. What do you do when the realization strikes you that you should have done things differently? You can't go back, can you? You can't undo what you did. Or maybe it's something that you didn't do that you'd like to do. You can't go back. You can't undo it. You can't redo it. You can't live it again. You can't relive the past. Although many of us rerun it in our minds over and over and over again. God's appearance to Jacob at Bethel assures us that he wants to give us a fresh start. You see, brothers and sisters, we are carriers of the new covenant, which fulfills the Abrahamic covenant, which is God's plan to bless the entire world. And as carriers of the new covenant, we are carriers of Jesus Christ, and God's plan to bless the entire world focuses on Christ. And as carriers of the new covenant, we have not lost our calling. We still have a job to do. We must share the life of God. We must share the life of Christ with others in our own unique way, with our own unique gifting. When you become a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ, God gives you a new identity and a new destiny. And then often in the years that follow that, He comes along, God comes along and affirms that destiny. He affirms that identity. You sense that God is still with you. And then perhaps, like Jacob, you end up in Shechem. You fail. Horrible mistake. Catastrophic mistake. Disaster. And you think to yourself, you know, I should be further along by now. I shouldn't be in Shechem. That shouldn't have happened. I should have been able to figure that out. I should have been able to do things differently. I should be further along in my life with God by now. And then God does an amazing thing. Just when you're your lowest, when you're feeling and wondering and thinking about how things might look differently if you had done things differently, God comes along and reaffirms you. And you sense His blessing. And you sense that He still loves you. And you sense that He is still with you. It's a powerful thing to sense God's affirmation of you. It is an extraordinarily powerful thing to sense God's reaffirmation of you when you become all too aware of the depth of your depravity. God's reaffirmation of us then challenges us to live in a way that befits our identity and our destiny. His reaffirmation of us reconnects us with his promises in a more intense, expansive way. And we realize or appreciate to a greater degree that God is changing and will change everything. God has a future for the world. Where is that future? It's right here. It's in this room. And in millions of others like it, whether they be towering cathedrals that pierce the sky or thatched roof mud huts that barely get off the ground. Wherever the people of God are gathered, the future of humanity is in that place. We are carriers of the new covenant, which means we are carriers of Jesus Christ. Despite our checkered past, even our recent checkered past, the future of humanity is with all us Jacobs. So when you come to Bethel again, which reminds you of a previous encounter with God, which reminds you of some previous experience, remember how desperate you once were. Remember how God showed up when you needed Him most. Remember how He has sustained you all these years. Let us not be people who forget where we have come from. Stones have probably been a part of your life as well. Difficulty, hardness, harshness. But has God met you there? Has God transformed some of those stones? Has God turned some of those stones into places of worship? Has God been faithful to you? Like Jacob, let us gather up all our memories and worship the Lord with them. This time, when you come to your spiritual Bethel, you have come as a worshiper, and you will leave as a worshiper. David Wilcox well captures the spirit of this passage as it relates to us in his song, Step Into Your Skin. Let me read it for you, or read part of it for you. Take your situation, all your circumstances, put it on you like it's made to fit you right. Take your friends and family, take the mile around you. Take the time that's left and step inside your life. Slip it like a glove around you. Don't you miss this love that's found you. Look at all that's real. There is no mistaking, this is where you've got to. Here's the life that you have dragged around so far. Because you could stretch it out and make it fit you better if you put it on and start with where you are. Don't be halfway out and dreaming. Don't be lost in doubt and scheming. Look at all that's real. And here's the chorus. Climb in. Wear it like a suit around your heart. You've been thinking you could not be where you are. Every morning, don't be thinking where you might have been. Every morning, shake it out and step into your skin. You see, you have this life that you have dragged around. Perhaps you have even dragged it through Shechem. And you've been thinking, if I had done things differently, I would not be where I am. But don't miss the love of God that's found you. Don't be thinking where you might have been. Instead, start where you are. Step into your skin. So failure, spiritual failure, does not disqualify us from the spiritual journey. we must mount a spiritual ascent on the heels of spiritual failure. And we must do so together. Grab the hand of somebody who's next to you. Grab a whole bunch of hands. And as I look out on this church, I see, well, okay, go ahead. I didn't mean it literally, but go ahead. God intends us for us, God intends for us to journey up the mountain together. Because we're all just a bunch of Jacobs, aren't we? We're all just a bunch of Jacobs who all know about our failure all too well, but God has met us in His grace. So, brothers and sisters, arise. Let us go up to Bethel. Okay, the band can come forward. And we are now going to sing a song in response to this, particularly focus on the line, "Reign in me again." If our experience has been like Jacob, we need to follow the Lord again and ask Him to reign in us again.